Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unplug It as we build towards round one. We are finally here. We've spoken about a couple of practice matches. There's been tribunal hearings, and we watched a weekend of footy last week that whet the appetite. There was some good stuff in there, but obviously it doesn't feel like it's quite started yet until your own side is in action, not to mention it plays havoc with the ladder for a while. But it'd be nice to get underway this week. We played Geelong at Cadinia Park in one of our more fascinating round one matches in a long time. I know they're all fascinating, but so much to pick apart in this one. Where are we at and how much of the game is determined by them? Obviously, if you look at Geelong, they had their moments last year, but ultimately were disappointing. So what happens next in that Geelong journey? Do they do a mini rebuild? Do they do one of their quick rejuvenations? Do they bounce straight back into contention? What type of Geelong side are we coming up against? I actually feel like I know what we'll do and I know roughly where we're at and what we'll provide. And I think we're a pretty decent side. And it's really a question of what they look like. And I think we've given them trouble at home and away over the last 3 years, beaten them a couple of times. Our pace hurts them a little bit. So, really fascinated. Probably we haven't beaten Geelong at Cadinia Park in 25 years, and in reality haven't really looked like it, apart from a couple of, like 2004-ish, we were okay. But it certainly feels like this is our best chance and the best shape we're in to do it. Yeah, so bring it on, obviously. They can open 1,000 grandstands if they want. It shouldn't mean shit, really, at the end of the day. I mean, it's, well, exactly.
They already have.
Another one in 3 weeks, probably. But yeah, look, there's a lot of things where you look at it and go, oh, get Geelong at Geelong in round one and all of this stuff's happening. But at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter. But H, yeah, it's a quick build-up. We're a few days away from the game and it has snuck up quickly, even though at the same time we've been waiting a little while.
Yeah, the Geelong ground that still can't point a curve in a wing. But it's as I think we said last week, it's probably going to be the best time to get them. I mean, yeah, opening round, you think they should be probably up and about and their home game. They've finally going to let the locals into the new stand. And it's just that thing you sort of think about and go, well, Geelong are pretty well over the last few years. They're kind of a notoriously slow starters at the moment. They're not a quick team. They're just probably not right. They're not at their peak. They a team who does peak late generally. And finish off really strong, and it's got a feeling of this is our time to get them. And we saw it in the last round last year, as we're also saying, why we wouldn't just continue that same form on again. Because at the end of the day, I feel like we've improved. Our list has improved since that game. I don't know, they feel a little bit stagnant. I don't think they've really, well, they've made a few list changes, but they haven't really brought in much that's going to make them a different team. I don't think there's a lot that actually changes the way they're going to play. They haven't brought in like another Dangerfield as a superstar. They haven't, there's nothing there that makes me look and go, they should be really dangerous. It's just the fact that it's in Geelong, and that's the only way you go, that's what you'd be concerned about. So, yeah, I mean, on paper, you're looking to think, we win that game. Then you add the Geelong factor in, you go, okay, look, it's probably going to be a bit tougher than what we think, but there's still a fair bit of comfort there in the end, though. So, yeah, it's a good, I guess, launch that if we go down there and, I mean, we win convincingly, you go, hey, fantastic start. But, yeah, we don't want to really go down there and not put in a performance and not show what we want to see for the rest of this season. If we're sluggish and we just fall back into perhaps the level or the game style Geelong want to play and we don't allow ourselves to be who we are, then, yeah, that'd be a little bit concerning.
Nick, it feels good to obviously be previewing a game, not previewing a tribunal hearing this week. Obviously, that's a much better outcome. But, yeah, it's exciting times.
It is, yeah. It's taken a little while to get to this point, but I think I'm now kind of at the point where I'm like, I can't wait for the footy to be back. I know it was kind of back for some people last weekend, but, you know, for a lot of the competition, it wasn't, and it didn't really feel like, you know, opening round of the footy. It didn't feel like your standard round one. We know it was, they called it round zero for some ridiculous reason, but didn't mind the fact that it was all played in the northern states. Like, I don't really have an issue with that, but my issue was that half the team wasn't playing, and it just didn't feel like there was really any buzz around it at all. So it is nice to be kind of a week down the track feeling like we're about to play footy again, and there is a bit of a buzz and there is some excitement. And yeah, I mean, like you said, Geelong and Geelong is always a tough ask, but yeah, I think they're very beatable. And I think you said, Parker, you kind of, I think we're at a point where we know what to expect from our team. What we don't know is what to expect from Geelong. And I think that's one of the real positives out of, you know, Ross's first year back in the seat, is that the team, you know what you're going to get from them. It's not that they're predictable, because I think they play in a way that is still exciting, and there's a lot of X factor and pace and run and all that sort of stuff. But we know that we're going to get that Ross Lyon group effort. And so I think we can pretty confident that we're going to turn up and have a crack. Whether it's enough ultimately is going to be the question. But I think we know now what to expect from this group.
Hopefully the last time we uttered this sentence, last win at Cadinia Park was 1999. So hopefully that changes. Barry Hall kicked four. Ben Walton kicked the sealer at the end. Robert Harvey got cleaned up by Gary Hocking and then led the Saints to victory. We were 25 points down in the last quarter, kicking against a five-goal breeze, and then kicked six in a row to win anyway. One of our great wins of that era. And then
how many name changes has that stuff
gone through? I know. But that was peak Tim Watson. We won that game and went 7-3 and were third on the ladder, and then became the worst side in history within a month, basically. And really never won a game again under his coaching. So one would argue that that's so St Kilda. Still a few talking points around selection. I think Nick's got potentially some inside word around the sub, so we'll chat about that later. But wanted to give a little bit of a big shout out in actual facts before we get underway. A little bit later on, we'll have a chat to Craig Devenport as well, who was a bit of a cult hero. But obviously football is built upon fans and, you know, the strength of that supporter base. And most of the good memories you have are not just results, but of the times you've spent watching games with certain people. And so my family, I want to give a shout out first of all to Graham Davey, passionate St Kilda supporter his entire life, who tragically passed away during the week. My family moved to Gippsland in the early 90s, and my dad and Graham met over local footy and became best mates. And having lived in Melbourne previously, they still had a passion to go watch St Kilda. So they set up the Gippsland St Kilda supporters group, which every game that St Kilda played in Melbourne, they would hire a minibus, which actually got bigger and ended up being a coach. And for the 97 grand final, it was three coaches. We had that many people heading down, and they ran that together. And, you know, those bus trips when I was a kid, 10, 11, 12, 13, are some of the best memories I've ever had. The, you know, St Kilda song blaring down, and then obviously especially on the way back, and people would be, you know, enjoying a couple of ales and singing songs. And Graham would always lead that charge. I remember with Up There Kazali that would play when it says here the Mighty Roar, he'd scream Winmar all the time. It became that sort of catchphrase. I remember as a kid, the 96 Anzac Cup Grand Final, ironically, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, there were a group of Carlton fans behind us who were very rowdy before the game. And Graham, when we started to get on a roll, which was pretty early, every time we'd kick a goal, he turned around, put the hand in the air and say, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, log on tram, leaves in 5 minutes, best be on it, see you later. But just a great fella every time you'd go back to Gippsland. He'd talk about this podcast and say, I heard you speak to such and such, or, you know, how do you think we'll go this week? Always very positive, always very optimistic, and it's always sad when you lose a part of the family. But that was a great experience watching footy with him and his family. So a shout out to his wife, Maria, and his children, Ryan and Michelle. It's a very sad scenario. So it'll be a fond farewell for him this week. But I certainly hope his boys can get the job done for him on Saturday. He deserves that and more. But yeah, I thought I'd give a little bit of a tribute, Nick, to a passionate Sainter who was certainly very close to my family as well.
No, very well said. And I think it's important to remember not just the people that are important to us, but the people that have had our footy club such a big part of their life. And yeah, I think we all have people, friends, family that are like that. So no, very well said, mate. Very well said.
Yeah. And speaking of, obviously, you know, passion and that type of thing, it's always big when these things get underway, but also when you hear about debutants, and that's one thing we can confirm. We'll go through the injury list a little bit later on, but Darcy Wilson, and I think most of us probably expected that this was going to happen, Nick, but he will play his first game for the Saints, and I actually sense he's a pretty fair chance to stay there for most of the year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's had a ripping preseason. The kid doesn't stop running. If anyone saw the two practice games, I think what you saw then was kind of, this is the baseline to expect from Darcy Wilson. You know, all the word from training on the track in the gym is that Darcy Wilson is one of the hardest workers, hardest trainers, most professional. You know, everything that people were talking about Matheus Filippo last year, Darcy Wilson has the potential to be something similar this season. I think you're right. He plays this week, and you know, barring injury, I think that he sticks the rest of the season in the team. But he might not be the only debutant, which I wanted to. You know, if anyone I think who listens to this show knows that we have friends in high places, and got a call,
and we don't go with mail unless we're fairly confident.
That's right. That's right. Mm. But the mail is that inside the club there is a very, very strong push for the sub to be one of Hugo Garcia or Lance Collard. Okay. So keep an eye out on selection because the expectation is that one of them will be in the team too.
It's a good position to be in because I got the feeling when you said debutant that it was going to be Schoenmakers who took 11 marks the other day, and the fact that we then go to a couple of these other kids and I'm like, well, there's a few of them, isn't there? So it's a nice position to be in. And I guess, H, the positive is on top of all of that, you know, Brad Crouch and Marcus Windhager removed from the injury list, Josh Battle removed from the injury list, Jack Sinclair did all the things he had to do up till tomorrow/Thursday's hit out. So obviously Clark and Howard and clearly Webster and probably Butler out of our best 22, but maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's the injury list started to look a bit like last year's, the way it was going to begin with. But yeah, you had a look at it and go, okay, well, a lot of these injuries could be gone before round one comes because we were basically looking at them 3 weeks before we played. And we might have said 1 or 2 weeks in the IA, but that was actually almost a 3 week gap from the update to when we would actually be taking the field. So it was a bit of, oh, okay, most of these players probably will be right in that case. I mean, from what it sounds like, if Sinclair gets through this week in training, it sounds like he plays. It's, yeah, that's a huge input in for us for round one. I mean, he's might be a bit rusty not playing in the practice games, but I mean, in all Australian, they're hard to replace, but generally they should be able to pick it straight up again and go from where he left off last year. And Windhager getting back straight away again. The whole situation there where exactly like it was, what you call it, Groundhog Day, but
yeah, well, basically
mirrored Groundhog Day, in the opposite end. So and the word that Jack Hayes has been out training too, you think, well, he may not be far away either if the opportunity arose for him. But if we're starting to get all these players back, hopefully this year we keep them on the field. Hopefully they all get able to get through and we get through with minimal injuries this season. And it's going to give us the best chance and it's going to give us a great chance to, one, prove Brad Johnson wrong. That'd be a great thing to do. And, yeah, just have another shot at it again and actually get to the final this year with good confidence, a lot more confidence than what we had last year. I mean, we did go up against the rampaging Giants at that time. They were unlucky to not make the grand final and even go on and win it. Every chance at keeping a good list together this year, and we just keep rolling on for the whole season.
Well, Brad Johnson tipped us to finish 17th in 2020 when we made the finals. So his track record around us hasn't been super. I would expect that we're a decent chance of proving him wrong, at least to some degree. It'd be interesting, Nick, with Butler probably a week or so away, whether that swings them into Collard or whether they stick with Garcia or which way they go on that, because Collard, bit of a natural goal kicker, and his pace might hurt Geelong potentially.
It's a really interesting one. I think if Butler's fit, he's probably in the team. So whether they decide to go with the two smalls, you know, the Higgins-Butler combination, or in this case, Higgins-Collard up forward, is a question mark. But I don't know. I mean, Garcia's been super impressive, and I think that he probably has that ability to go through the middle, can play off half back, can play off half forward, can probably swing through the forward line as well. Maybe that versatility gets him over the line, but Collard certainly has a bit of that X factor, and certainly that bit of run and carry, bit of the, you know, see ball, get ball when it's in the air. I don't know. I really don't know what to expect, but I think if it was me, I'm probably leaning towards Garcia just because of that extra versatility. But yeah, Collard certainly looks like an exciting prospect, that's for sure.
Obviously, club debutants too. You think Riley Bonner will play in all likelihood? So
that'll be
he's pretty well came along just at the right time to take that spot of Webster. Like you, it's almost a lucky pickup when you look at it now. It's we took him with our very last pick, and you go, well, he's pretty much going to slide straight in. We didn't expect that to happen in any case. We thought, well, look, if he started playing good football in Sandringham, and he may get an opportunity, but yeah, it seems like it's just going to fall straight into his lap. And he showed us that he played really good footy in the two practice matches. I mean, a back flanker kicking a couple of goals, and that's shows he's dangerous and shows he's going to be very handy. So it's
The Webster replacement's a really interesting one, because obviously Bonner comes into the team for Webster, but they clearly don't play the same position. I mean, Webster has kind of turned into that lockdown small defender. Obviously, Ben Patton has played that role in the past, and he's not going to play for at least half the season, probably more. So in that case, with Bonner coming in to play, I guess, more of that running halfback role, which either means Sinclair's not playing or they play alongside each other, or Sinclair moves more into the middle. Who takes that lockdown spot? Is it Stocker? I mean, Stocker probably fits the bill to some respect. He's strong, he's tough, he's hard. He probably doesn't have the pace.
Yeah, and you don't want Nass doing it.
No. So
Stocker's perfect
there anyone
for that.
Else? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is there anyone else that really fits the bill in that spot? I think it's probably
Stocker. Well, Wilkie can play small as well if a small forward's a problem or
probably not when you've got Hawkins and
no, that's
who's the other bloke down there for them? Henry, who kicked 38 goals or something last year. So you could envisage that Cordy and Battle get the talls, Cameron and Hawkins, and then the third of those players goes to maybe Ollie Henry, and then obviously they're missing Gary Rowan, so that's and Cam Guthrie through the middle, but they're the two on their injury list, but that. It's handy outs, but yeah, then it's Stocker. Obviously, you want Wanganeen, Miller, Sinclair, and Bonner. Obviously, they have to play on someone, but you want them getting 85 possessions between the three of them, ideally, which means one of them probably has to play on the wing, which might be Nass, maybe, just to see which way you want to look at it. So,
yeah, I don't know. Wilkie might go to Cameron.
Yeah.
But
depends
how far up the ground he plays, because he seemed to be creeping further up the ground towards the end of the year last year. I don't know whether that was just a ball chasing thing, he was just trying to get into the game, but it seemed to happen a bit more often than what that was.
Yeah,
so
he did push up a bit.
Yeah, so if I would expect if he's going that high, Wilkie won't be chasing him that far. He'll let him go up there and we'll have someone else pick him up. Whether that be on, I don't know, if Batchel plays, he might go up there, but yeah, I'm not sure if he's going to be on the list or not in the team this week. But Wilkie wouldn't be following that far up the ground, but that's where it becomes versatile. If they have the small forward line while Cameron is up the field, he's able to play that both those roles. He can step in and take the small forward, or yeah. So it's a while he's down there, you expect him to take it, but yeah, at least we've got that bit of versatility.
And are we set on Cordy coming in for Howard? He's the natural replacement, right?
You'd think so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and that's the thing. There's a few of those options and around Geelong in terms of looking at the key to beating them. It is pace that we've heard them with in the past. They would know that, and they've obviously had a bit of time to work on it, and you know that they'll usually unearth something. Their depth through the middle's taken a hit. Obviously, it depends on guys like Tanner Bruin and those sorts of guys giving them, Parfitt and these sorts of players giving them a bit more drive. Does Tom Jai Stewart Clark. Spend more time in the – yeah, does Stewart spend more time in the middle, or does he still play that role of halfback? I mean, he's the key. If you limit his drive, then that hurts them significantly. Clearly, they've got some stars on their list, but I think there's more deficiencies. I think basically if you use Geelong as a marker – if we don't finish ahead of them this year, we won't make the eight. If we finish ahead of them, we can. So it's one of those, and that's not to say they'll be a bad side. I just think they smack straight into the middle of the table somewhere. So, they're almost a marker for us.
The Stewart one's a really interesting one because Cooper Sharman played that kind of defensive forward role on that kind of intercept defender quite well. I think he might have even done it on Stewart at one point.
Yes.
The coming back into the team with a fully fit Max King, fully fit Tim Embry, does Sharman still have a role to play in this team?
Definitely.
I think so. Yeah.
I think his match-winning capabilities, like he didn't dominate the practice matches, but he looks pretty good. I think he's a real point of difference and X factor. I think, as you say, he can either lock down or he can just be a creative third target. He's probably the best kick for – I mean, Membry's a pretty good kick as well, but he's probably the best kick for goal in our side. Mm. So if you would ask me who I'd like to have a shot inside 50 on our list, it would be him before anyone else. I think he's, pretty important as a third wheel, excellent in the final last year against the Giants. Mm. So hopefully he can find that consistency.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he's showing that versatility now that we hadn't seen
definitely. Previously.
You know, he played those few games as that intercept defender a year and a half ago or so. I think he showed in the second half of last year that he can be a real point of difference and almost be a bit of a focal point, which then takes the pressure off someone like a Max King as well.
Definitely. It'll be... I think we get those matchups right and, give ourselves every chance. It's never easy to win down there. I mean, they beat Melbourne and Port and Sydney and teams like that down there and lost to the Giants, Freo and the Bulldogs, I think. So we'll see. But it's our best chance on paper since probably 2004 when we lost an epic to them by a kick down there. I would think a couple of years ago we kicked the first five against them and then only got overrun in the last 10 minutes. It certainly feels a little bit better for us this time. Before we hear from our special guest, Tim Embry obviously had some words. We know that was a sad point at the end of last season and a bit of uncertainty that there was around that, Nick, and it showed a lot of courage. Obviously, there's, with a name, so to speak, there's that opportunity to spread the word and raise awareness, and he didn't have to take that message on, but it's good that he did.
Yeah, look, I think there's a few things. A, it's obviously good to see him up and running, healthy, he looked happy, he sounded confident, strong. That was the main takeaway. The second point is the bravery and courage it takes to go out and say those things in front of a camera.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that struggle with mental illness and their emotional health and all these things that it's really important to see public figures and your heroes talk about their issues and kind of normalize these things because it is a normal part of society and it is a real issue that people don't talk enough about it. So firstly, great to see him happy and healthy and strong again. Secondly, well done for doing it and taking the steps that you have done. lastly, and I guess for me, it kind of takes a bit of a turn at this point where I don't think it answers any of the questions that everybody had at the end of last year. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to know the details of what happened that night and that morning. But from a pure football perspective, that's the biggest game that this footy club has played for a long time. You know, senior leader of the footy club, I do think that there are some questions to be answered as to, you know, why it came to this, all these sorts of things that I don't think he spoke to, and whether or not it's his job to do that, you know, I'm torn. But I do think that you know, the fans, the members, whatever it is, and it sounds awful, and I don't mean it in a way that he's got to answer to everybody. I certainly don't mean it that way. But there is a lot of speculation, most of it wrong and gross and horrible and awful, that I think could be cleared up with a pretty simple statement as to this is what happened, and this is what I was dealing with. Because I think that speculation and those rumors and all those horrible things that we all went through that day and that night and that week, that was rife across the internet. You know, it's got to stop, and it's not going to stop until some of those questions are answered. And so I thought that the statement kind of fell flat a little bit when it came to that. And that the last thing was that I kind of didn't like it turning into a come and get your ticket for Spuds game. That part felt a little bit forced. And when you're talking about someone's well-being and mental health, it shouldn't turn into a promo marketing event, I didn't think, but that's just me.
Yeah, and I think it's spot on. I think it's, you know, you don't want to shy away from the elephant in the room in these things. And I've often been of the belief that, you know, a lot of times when people discuss topics, it's linear. There's one way or the other way. It's possible for multiple things to be true at the same time, and that's the case in so many aspects that I think showed a lot of courage. Seems to be, you know, a terrific fellow, great leader, fantastic to see him healthy, well done in all of that respect. But does it answer every question? No. But at the same time, is he obligated to answer every question? No. But both of those things are true at the same time. Like there is a lot of that grey area that's still floating around, and a lot of innuendo, which he didn't create, but it's still there. And yes, it was an important game, and yes, it did hurt, and yes, there are those things that are relevant to it. And sometimes, you know, those personal battles do get so strong and so hard that, you know, those other things don't matter. And that will always be more important than football. I think everybody agrees with that. It's just, yeah, if the purpose is to answer questions, it didn't necessarily answer all of them, H, I would think.
No, I mean, yes, I think, as Nick's saying, people want to know, but do people need to know? And it's, we've got him back. That's the main thing. He's still here. He's still with us. And he's back on the field. And but on top of that, also, he's back with his family. And that's the main thing out of everything that you sort of go, that's what we want. If he was back there and not playing football, you go, well, that's
so
great.
Be it.
Yeah. But he's back where he was completely. And you fantastic. It's the fact he's been able to get himself back out there to that point. The fact he's been able to, speak about it even. It wouldn't be an easy thing to do. So what we've received and what we've seen, and that honestly, you can't really ask for much more. And yeah, watch him get back out there round one and hopefully kicks a bag and just thinks it's the best thing ever to happen. And it's great to just see him back out there again.
I get 100%, and I agree with all that, H. I guess the example that I come back to is that had it been a physical injury, had it been had a few drinks and jumped the fence and broke an ankle or stepped in a hole and did a you know, knee ligament or like whatever it is, fallen down the stairs and broken a leg, like, that would have been out. It would have been straight down the line. This is what happened. This is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
We hope he's coming back. It is different. It is different with mental health, and I accept that, but I also don't like it because I think it's part of what creates the stigma around it, is that nobody talks about it and no one talks about the importance of this stuff and what happens when people have mental health crises. And so that creates this external stigma, speculation, rumors, innuendo, all that stuff, because no one talks about it. We kind of beat around the bush and we kind of allude to things and whatever, but no one kind of talks about it straight down the line. And that's my only issue. Not that I think Tim Embry should be out there talking about every little detail of his life and whatever. I certainly don't think that. But I do think the way that we approach mental health compared to physical health and injury is different. And I think we need to get to a point where it's just part of life, because it's what so many people are dealing with in normal life.
Yeah, and there's no question about that. I mean, there is something wrong, like there would be if you had a broken arm or you had a virus or any of those sorts of things. If someone's sick, you go to the doctor. Someone will write a card saying, get well soon. Someone will ring you up and say, hope you feel better. Can I do anything for you? And it needs to be treated almost in that same way. It doesn't need to be the, oh, we better be quiet about this and hush, hush. And on the one hand, obviously, through him talking about it, that's not happening, which is good. It's important to start that dialogue, because the consequences of these things can be unbelievably severe. So obviously anything needs to be done to eliminate that. And, you know, as a club, unfortunately, we've seen instances very close to home of that being a reality. So, anything that could be done to better that and you know, all power to Tim for trying that, even if it doesn't necessarily answer everyone's questions. I think he's putting his, you know, one foot in front of the other, and that's a very good thing. And, yeah, hopefully anybody who listens to it at any time, even if they think, oh, you know, my old mate's been a little bit different the last couple of weeks, you know, he's not normally like that. You give him a call or do that type of stuff, even if it's just something small in that sense. And that's all you can really ask at this point, I think, out of conversations like that.
Yeah,
spot on. Obviously, it's been a reasonably heavy start to the show, but we appreciate you sticking with us through all of that. We'll lighten it up a little bit with our special guest, who was a cult hero in the early 90s. There's no doubt about that. And you'll hear a little bit about a couple of his footballing heroes, and he'd actually look a tiny bit like one of them. I speak of Craig Devenport.
Hot-foot handball. New corner, takes the ball. Low goes to ground. It bounces. Kelly will probably run it towards the boundary line. He's caught. Devenport. Craven's on his own to the goal square.